from KQED.
From KQED Public Radio, good morning and welcome to Forum. I'm Aarti Shahani, in today for Mina Kim. In this last half hour, we're going to talk about the gender gap in architecture. In the tech sector, we've talked about the lack of girls and women enrolling in computer science programs. But in architecture, the problem is a bit different. About half of the architecture graduates are women, but out in the workforce, licensed practitioners and senior management who are female, that's just 18%. The missing 32%. That's become the source of some reflection inside the industry. Here to talk with us about that is Rosa Sheng. She's a senior associate at one of San Francisco's top firms, Bolin Sawinski Jackson. If you've ever stepped into an Apple store, then you've seen her work. And as part of the American Institute of Architects San Francisco, she's also founder of a group called Equity by Design. Rosa, thanks for coming to speak with us.
Thanks, Aarti. It's a pleasure.
You know, I want to start with your story. You're an accomplished architect. Tell me a bit about the dream projects that you've worked on and the fact that you thought about leaving the field.
Yes. Well, I've been pretty fortunate in that even though I started out graduating after the recession in 1994, there was an opportunity to come out to San Francisco to work on Pixar Animation Studios. And at the time, that's what started our West Coast office out here. So we had about 8 to 10 people that came out to work on that project. And then as a result, we ended up founding the San Francisco office. And from that, our rapport with Steve Jobs ended up being the calling card to work on the Apple retail stores, which you know well today. But at that point, it was still not believed that one could have an entire store just of Apple products. But it was, you know, part of other department stores. And the challenge was to create a new aesthetic that would draw people into those stores. So that was an amazing time to be working on those projects.
So back then, as an architect, they said it was impossible.
That's right. So there was a challenge to all of us within the firm, but also our engineers, our structural engineers, to come up with the new glass technology that would be used for the stores.
Interesting. And how was working at Pixar? On Pixar, not at, on, designing the place where those geniuses go.
It was very exciting because we had this very collaborative and close relationship with the user groups, the people that were actually the animators, the producers. And we really got the inside kind of energy of the space, that the fact they're all big kids was really fascinating and fun.
And so, Rosa, I mean, it sounds like, I mean, you have a dream job.
Yes, yes. And I think that's part of the question why people ask, well, you're doing so well, or you continue to do so well. Why did you ever want to leave architecture? That's part of the story I told at TEDx Philadelphia last week, was basically I had reached a pinch point, and that's part of our research that we had done 2 years ago. I had contemplated leaving architecture at a point when the 2009 recession hit, at the same time that I had my second child. And caregiving is something that's kind of not talked about a lot. It's kind of the assumption that, well, if you're having kids, you're a mother, then you're going to bow out of your career. But what if those people want to come back to work in their respective careers? Is there an opportunity for them to come back? And at that time, with the recession compounded with having a child, I personally felt constrained. And the limited opportunities, the projects that were coming in, as well as my ability to work full-time or even extended hours, was something of contemplation.
And so specifically as a woman in this field, you feel like that affected, it wasn't just a bad economic moment, but it was
my own confidence level, I think. Some bizarre thing happens to you that people can't understand unless they go through it, I think, is the actual child rearing and the confidence level of, for whatever reason, was down, and depression and all those other things that people, again, talk about, but you don't realize it until you go through it yourself, of not feeling adequate, feeling like a failure, that you weren't a good parent because you're, you know, working part-time, or and you're not a good architect because you're not able to do the full-time hours that you did before. You know, so having your superpowers taken away of sorts, where you thought you were invincible, and knowing that you have this kryptonite, these weaknesses, and how do you reconcile that?
You know, just looking at you as you're talking, I'm feeling the weight of what you're saying. And part of what strikes me that seems extraordinary is that you were thinking about leaving.
Yes.
But you did a completely different thing instead.
Yes.
You started this thing called Equity by Design. Explain that.
So at the time that I was thinking about leaving, I was luckily talking to some people about it. I was opening up. And one of those people, Saskia Dennis Van Diel, who is a good friend of mine, said, don't leave right now out of, you know, desperation, think about it carefully. But as you're thinking about it, you can offer so much to other people through your experience. So I spoke at a conference called the Missing 32% Symposium, sponsored by the AIA San Francisco. And at that symposium, there was this energy of women coming together, talking about their experiences and their frustrations with the field, and all of us realizing that we weren't in it alone and that something needed to be done to change the ratio.
And what's that something?
That something was a survey. So I was reading a lot of articles at the time, and Alexandra Lang wrote this article called Architecture's Lean In Moment, where she kind of described a manifesto of what needed to be done. And it was really exciting to read it. But in it, she says, we need a new set of best practices for architecture, not just for women. And we can do that by assessing data and seeing what's wrong. And then from those challenges, create solutions.
And so, I mean, the idea being that, listen, if women are feeling what you come to call pinch points or feeling the stress in this industry, there might be bigger structural issues with the industry.
That's right.
That you need to look at because your problems are a symptom of it.
Yes. And we had our survey. We had 2,289 people respond to it across the U.S. And what we learned was that it wasn't just about women. As you're saying, it's industry-wide. There's problems for men and women and why they leave the field of architecture that were pretty fascinating. Less than 50% of the people that we asked were satisfied in their current job situation. So 41% of the men and 29% of the women were satisfied. And some of those influencers that triggered lack of satisfaction were not being able to achieve promotion to principal, a lack of transparency as far as how you get to become a principal and are promoted, and then just having meaningful work that in your day-to-day, basic functionality of what you're doing that applies to your overall goals in life.
You also learned about a pay gap?
Yes, yes. It kind of affirmed our suspicions that there was a pay gap, but we actually had the numbers. So $5,000 on average for people starting off out of school, up to $15,000 overall at the worst points. So the 10 to 15 year mark is that stretch where you see people start to leave.
I'm sorry, so 5,000, meaning women make 5,000 less on average?
That's correct. Yes. And 15,000 at its worst. Yes. Go ahead.
No, please go ahead.
And that was backed up by another research study. So it wasn't just our survey. It was Architect Magazine had a survey supporting that $15,000 gap. So that was pretty shocking.
That's a big number, yeah. We're talking about the gender gap in architecture. Roughly half of graduates from architecture programs are women, but out in the workforce, only about 18% are. We're with Rosa Sheng, a senior associate at Bolin Sawinski Jackson. And if you'd like to join the discussion, maybe you've thought about leaving your dream job because you hit the glass ceiling. Maybe you're trying to break that ceiling. Give us a call at 866-733-6786. That's 866-733-6786. You can also email your questions or comments to forum at kqed.org or post them on our website, kqed.org/forum. The results of that survey, I mean, you were already feeling these things. Did
yes.
it surprise you?
They are affirming, but some of the things were surprising. The fact that both men and women were feeling dissatisfied was surprising, as well as the fact that of the people that left architecture, most of those people left between 0 to 5 years out of graduating from architecture school. The bulk of the people are leaving without even getting their foot in the door. So we want to dig deeper in our next survey to figure out why. But some of the top reasons that were influencers were the extremely long hours of work, the lack of compensation, you know, commensurate with those long hours, the lack of role models, being able to see people like yourself in leadership positions. And even bullying is something that was one of the top five answers that was happening, being pressured into, you know, conforming or staying late or, you know, not being part of the team.
You know, and talking about the lack of role models, like, you know, when I think about great architects, you know, like I think of Frank Lloyd Wright and Antoni Gaudi, you know, Chicago
yes.
and Barcelona, there aren't women who immediately pop into my mind as a layperson. And apparently in 2003, in this lean-in moment that you previously talked about, there was a controversy around the Pritzker Prize, a top prize in architecture.
That's correct. So Denise Scott Brown, who is in partnership with Robert Venturi, they have the practice Venturi Scott Brown, which they've since retired. But at the time, In 1991, the Pritzker Prize was awarded solely to Robert Venturi. And 2 years ago, a group, Harvard Women in Design Group, started a petition to get Denise recognized as being part of that work, that body of work. So that created quite a media stir about, you know, resurrecting that and why women don't get recognized. But that's part of the problem, is that the awards that are given out to architects are not recognizing women. And part of the time, even they're asked to step out of the picture when it's a collaborative effort, they're not being recognized.
Like, and, literally step out of the picture.
That's correct.
Like, we're taking a photograph, man, please step aside.
Even at the insistence, and I think this was part of Denise's story, that, no, I am an architect. I worked on this project as well. And no, sorry, step aside. We're taking a photo.
And so what happened in her specific instance, that campaign?
The Pritzker Foundation, because of technicalities and the fact that some of the jury members aren't even alive, they chose to acknowledge the fact that they needed to change things going forward into the future, but they did not retroactively award that acknowledgement to Denise.
I see.
So that created quite an uproar, and I think at that time it was the breaking point for people.
Mm-hmm. And did household names in Bay Area architecture like Julia Morgan and others, did they step into this as well?
Yes, and a year and a half after that controversy, Julia Morgan was awarded the American Institute of Architects top award. It's like a lifetime achievement award, the gold medal, posthumously, which again stirred controversy because at the same time that finally a woman was being recognized for her great work, not just in California, but nationally, she was posthumously awarded. She's been dead for 50 years.
Right, right. And so history coming to rise up in place of who is here.
Exactly.
All right. We're going to take a call now. Chris from Napa is on the line. Chris?
Yes, I'm here.
Yeah, please go ahead with your question or comment.
Well, I'm a big supporter of more women in architecture. It's pathetic that over 50% of the first candidates entering college are women, and yet by the time we get done, there's only 3 or 4% are actually becoming architects. And I was a juror for the county, for the state, a commissioner, where women were coming through the process, and they were right, they're terrific. But the number of women coming through was incredibly small. I think the biggest problem has always been the AIA. I think the American Institute of Architects has done a disservice to its constituents for the last 100 years. It's never been willing to take responsibility and get involved and get in front of the train for gaining jobs for architects and for our industry. You know, years ago they should have been taking on construction management as required as an architect. They should have done the same thing with LEED as LEED came out, became popular. It should have been an architect only or an architect required industry, and it has never become an integral part of the construction industry.
Chris, thank you for your call. Rosa, you definitely have a response.
Yes. So I think that in recent years, if you can't be in a join them has been the kind of idea where we infiltrate. If you want things to change, you have to get in there and roll up your sleeves and be part of the change. So we have motivated people by saying take action. And by taking action, a lot of us have gotten positions within the AIA to start that change. So this past May, we went to the convention and we proposed a resolution that had to get voted by the delegates. So 4,117 delegates voted in favor of passing an equity in architecture resolution. And what that means is that it's a step forward into creating a commission that's appointed by the president this year, who happens to be a woman, Elizabeth Chu Richter, who will have not just architects, but industry experts in the fields of work-life flexibility, what works for women at work. We're considering asking Joan Williams of UC Hastings because of her body of work that deals with implicit bias and other, you know, issues and challenges for women, and taking all that knowledge and prescribing best practices within the AIA as a knowledge community, something that's not talked about right now. So bringing that to the forefront.
So you see transformation happening there.
We see change happening. It is a slow process, but at least it's happening versus getting ignored or pushed off to the side.
If you'd like to join the discussion, maybe you've thought about leaving your dream job or you've hit the glass ceiling trying to break it, give us a call at 866-733-6786. That's 866-733-6786. Rosa, can you tell me a little bit more? I mean, having mentors is phenomenally important. I mean, it's who,
yes,
it's who, not just who opens the door for you, but who helps you think about the doors you're even trying to open.
Absolutely.
Goals. What's been your experience of having mentors?
Well, expanding upon that, it's not just mentors, but it's champions. And what we've realized is that it's not just people giving you advice, but people actually going to bat for you in any given situation. People acknowledging your work and how hard you work, and even sticking up for you when something happens where you're not being promoted or in a challenging situation. So in my own experience, my biggest champions have been, you know, my teammates and also my clients, the people that basically acknowledge the work that I have been doing and are able to say, you know, Rosa's doing a great job is better than myself saying, I did a great job, right? We can't say that we've done a great job.
If I do say so myself.
So, and champions and mentors don't have to be people that are older than you. We are promoting that you can find mentors and champions within your cohort, within people that are younger than you, teaching you new skills and being able to support you. It's very important.
Has that become a more prominent part of how you think of your own work in terms of how much you're doing that for other women?
Absolutely. And men as well. We're inviting men and women to come to the table. And basically, there was this little competition we had at the AIA convention called the Equity Hackathon. So we took the Silicon Valley idea, which they have rapid fire solution building, and the winning team.
Hack.
So how do we hack these problems that are so challenging? And we had teams work on for 4 hours on these solutions. And one of them was, how do we hack the problem of lack of mentorship? So the winning team called themselves Build Your Tribe, which was founded on this premise of having an app that you could basically use to find the people that would be the best suited mentors for yourself and then being able to connect with them through your similar experiences and to get advice.
In terms of, you know, you'd mentioned in terms of mentorship, it's not just, you know, your colleagues or your managers or bosses, but it's also, you know, your clients. You knew Steve Jobs. You met him.
Yes. I was fortunate to work with him during the time we designed Pixar Animation Studios and also collaborating on the Glass Staircase and the Glass Cube eventually. So there was a story that I told at TEDx, and I'll tell it really quickly, in that at the time that I had my first child, we went back for the Cube opening, and I was invited to go to dinner, but there was only one place at the table at the time. I was with my family, so I didn't think I was able to go. I turned it down, not having confidence in myself to be able to go, or thinking that I deserved to go.
Ask for more seats.
Yes, or to even dare to ask for more seats. So I turned it down. Surprisingly, he came back to me a second time and a third. And the second time he said, okay, you can bring your husband, but no kids. And again, I couldn't go. And I gave new meaning to the term no child left behind, I think. But I didn't. It wasn't that I was trying to be difficult. It was really that I didn't feel value in myself to ask for these things. And at the end of the day, he said, okay, your kid can come. You know, you drive a hard bargain. But what that showed me was that it reminded me that we need to value ourselves. And people who are our champions show us that. And we also need to be champions to other people who don't see their own value.
These are conversations you had with Jobs directly over RSVPs?
This was in-person conversation in the store. So at the TEDx conference, I showed a picture that somebody actually took in the mass sea of people during the opening at the time that he asked me the last time, which he said, you know, if you want your child to come, she can come. So we ended up going to dinner with him. And it was just an amazing experience and a reminder that the greatest visionary of all time or the world had the sense to see value in me when I was blind to it and I couldn't see it in myself.
And it seems like with this greatest visionary, maybe you moved the needle a little bit.
I hope so. And I tell the story not as a bragging right or anything. I think that is my fear that people will think that. But I tell the story as a motivator to ask for what you need and the people that believe in you, who think you're worth of coming to the table will continue to ask you to come.
We've got some great emails that I'd like to share. One is from Nagashree, who writes, I'm currently a job captain at a leading architecture firm in the Bay Area. I have a master's in architecture, 10 years of working experience, and have 2 children under 5 years. I'm working 36 hours a week and get the pressure from my work that my reduced work hours are not working for them and I'll have to work more, require more time. I have friends in the tech industry, and women in tech have more flexibility to work from home. We don't. I'm at the cusp where I'm planning to switch my profession, and this discussion comes at a great point.
Yes, and I think a lot of the women, you know, that struggle with that is because of the largest pinch point, which is caregiving, beyond licensure or even the early challenges with hiring and building up your skills. And I think that's outside of architecture, that's a bigger challenge. You know, how do we deal as a nation with paid family leave? We are one of the few modernized nations of the world that still doesn't have a government-supported national family leave, paid family leave policy. And it's a Band-Aid approach where a lot of firms are actually coming to the table to supplement that.
And this comparison to the tech industry, your thoughts?
Yes. So, you know, with tech, there is the flexibility of being able to work more remotely because a lot of the work that you do is on the computer. But a lot of the work that architects do are face-to-face conversations with clients, with their teams. So
Lisa writes, I was the first woman to go through the Masters of Architecture program at Cal. At the time, the program included only 2 women, both spouses. How to address the elephant in the room? Unmitigated sexism in the field. I was told I was a great designer, but how would I keep pace with the young Turks? Okay. She says, thanks for the conversation. And I named my daughter Julia.
Oh, that's great. And I think by telling our stories, it's not just about the statistics and the data. It's about these personal anecdotes of people that have challenges and have overcome them. One of them that I want to tell to motivate that person who asked that question is this woman named Pamela Tang, who came to us last year after she had raised 4 children. She's in her probably mid-50s. I don't want to incriminate myself by saying the wrong age. But basically, she said she wanted to come back to architecture. And she went to MIT. She didn't get her license before she started having kids. She asked us, how can I get back in? So we gave her this laundry list of things that you need to do to become an architect. And we thought we scared her away because she stopped coming to the meetings. Well, a year later, she came to us with the great news that she had taken all of her exams and passed them, and that she had gotten a job to complete her internship hours. And she is on her way to licensure. I think she's 200 hours short of attaining licensure. So if she can do it, she's kind of a motivator, her story, to others that, yes, we can, and we should encourage each other. Even though, yes, there is sexism, it's not going to go away right away, but we need to speak up.
And you're seeing it in terms of the work you're doing. If you'd like to join the discussion, maybe you're an architect in the Bay Area. How has your job experience been? Give us a call at 866-733-6786. You can also email your questions or comments to forum@kqed.org or post them to our website, kqed.org/forum. Another listener writes, can you discuss overall professional compensation and liability parity? In lower risk professions like tech or finance, the compensation and financial incentives are greater than in architecture. How can we attract talent when compensation isn't there?
Yes. So that's been a big point of discussion. Part of it is building up our skills to get better compensation. So learning negotiation skills that aren't necessarily taught in architecture school has been one of our leading kind of action-based workshops that we teach. Negotiation is your power tool. But aside from that, we need other motivators to have people stay. So the things that people asked for in the survey were having more meaningful work and having connection, better work firm culture, having more flexible hours to be able to, again, manage families or even personal situations that call for flexibility. And also the connection, the strong work culture where you feel that you are part of a team is really important to the people that took the survey.
Is the field changing in a sense? We hear in a lot of industries, things are becoming more interdisciplinary, more collaborative. Do you see that happening in architecture? And then does it change the underlying gender dynamics that you're concerned about as well?
Yes. Another proponent that we're proposing is architecture and the expansion of traditional architecture practice as we know it, just building the building, to providing other services, whether it's design thinking services that we see in the business school teaching that's going on right now. We're eminently trained to be design thinkers. Or if it's in the pre-planning process, being able to engage the client in a way to help them foresee things that they don't see right away, given their experience in the construction industry.
And just give me, I'm a little lost here, explain the architecture and thinking through what exactly, give examples.
Yes. So architecture and being, I can be an architect and I also have these other skill sets to offer you, that we're expanding our service offerings so that it's not only being a better spokesperson for architects and what we do, but also being collaborative and being more engaged and not being limited to our silo of, sorry, we just build buildings and we're not really thinking about what happens before the building is built. And sorry, we're not really thinking about what happens to the life of the building, you know, 10, 15 years from now and how it evolves. So our call to action is let's expand the offering of services in order to engage the community and serve the community better.
I want to share one more note from a listener, Beth. She writes, with more and more people encountering some type of disability, can Ms. Chang speak to the design challenges she found inspiring and challenging?
Yes.
And by the way, the listener says, love the glass stairs at the Apple store.
Yes. Something that is very prevalent in California and I think is being discussed nationwide is universal design. So having that empathy, I think, is important to know what the physical challenges of people who are in spaces or limitations and being able to design around them, to be creative, to think about ways that the physical space can be inviting and empowering and not limiting. A lot of it has to do with accessibility, not just for people in wheelchairs, but people who are blind, people who have other things, physical challenges. And interestingly enough, the I Look Up campaign by the American Institute of Architects, the feature profile is of an architect who became blind, Chris Dowd, who is actually in the Bay Area.
Wow.
And he gave a presentation last night about how he works around those challenges to be able to design spaces for people with physical disabilities.
Oh, very interesting. We're joined this half hour by architect Rosa Sheng, a senior associate at Bolin Sawinski Jackson and founder of Equity by Design. Their survey of the industry sheds light on how female architects are starting off making thousands less than their male counterparts and what can be done to level the playing field. Thank you for being part of our program.
Thank you, Arthi.
Forum is produced by Irene Noguchi, Tina Lauerberg, Judy Campbell, and Suki Lewis. Our senior editor is Dan Zoll. Our engagement producer is Amanda Stupai, with online help from David Marks. Our engineer today is Danny Bringer.
The production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio and the Germanicos Foundation and the Generosity Foundation.